listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Special greetings to our newest radio station. It makes like seven in the last 3 weeks, I think, that we've added. This is WUMM in, I think it's Machias, Maine. My apologies to folks listening to WUMM if I mispronounce it, M-A-C-H-I-A-S. Anyhow, it's Friday, Friday the 13th, but Friday, and that means our first hour of the program, Senator Bernie Sanders, our national town hall meeting with the guy I think of as America's senator, although Vermont knows that he's theirs. Hey, Bernie.
Hey, Tom. Great to be with you.
It is great having you with us. So what's on your agenda?
Well, it was a busy week in Congress after the recess, August recess ended. Obviously, I think the issue on most people's minds was Syria, and I think we saw something really extraordinarily interesting regarding the president's proposal for intervention in the Syrian civil war. And what you saw is across the political spectrum, from some of the most conservative people to some of the most progressive people in this country, is saying, no, we don't want to get involved in this really bloody and complicated civil war in Syria. And I think you saw that for two reasons. Number one, there is a lot of mistrust about the wisdom with regard to American foreign policy in recent years. People were lied to in terms of Afghanistan, a short war. Well, that was 12 years ago. We're still in Afghanistan. Certainly in terms of Iraq and Bush's claim about weapons of mass destruction there, and the loss between Afghanistan and Iraq of some 600, you know, brave American men and women, trillions of dollars being spent, and people really have serious doubts about that. But on top of that, I think, Tom, is that the American people are saying, you know what, we in the middle class, we in the working class of this country, we're facing enormous problems. Unemployment is really at 14%. Kids are graduating high school and college, can't find jobs. Elderly people are losing their jobs. People are losing their pensions. Real income is going down for millions and millions of people. The gap between the very, very rich and everybody else is growing wider. There was just a study that came out a few days ago pointing out, it's just incredible stuff, that since 2009, between 2009 and 2012, 95% of all the new income created in this country went to the top 1%. 60% went to the top 0.1%.
Wow.
1% got 60% of the new income. So the American people, I think, we're saying is we are really mistrustful about American foreign policy in general. But more importantly, yeah, we disgusted by chemical weapons and the ruthless dictatorship of Assad, and we want the international community to deal with that. But most importantly, we want the President of the United States Congress to start focusing on the issues of importance to us, create millions of jobs in this country, put our kids back to work, protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, do something about the fact that so many people are seeing a decline in their income and their wages. Worry about the American people. Let's get something going. I think that is, to my mind, one of the messages out there in terms of why there was so much opposition to getting involved in a military intervention in Syria. In my office, I have to tell you, it was about 95% of the calls and emails that we got were in opposition to that. The other interesting point that we're going to do, show a film on Tuesday night in Washington, and people can call my office if they live in the Washington area to get more information about it, on the Koch brothers, just a piece in the paper today about tax returns indicating that the Koch brothers are spending some $236 million in the last year supporting a whole bunch of right-wing causes. And all of that takes us to another issue that I think all of us have got to worry about, probably the most important issue, and that is the conversion of American democracy into an oligarchic form of government, where as a result of Citizens United, this disastrous Supreme Court decision, a handful of billionaire families like the Koch brothers and others are able to contribute unlimited amounts of money into the political process. So they not only have huge control over the economy, economic life of this country, but they also now have huge impact on politics in this America, in this country. So, you know, that's an issue, and I'm going to continue to work for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. As I think you mentioned on your news report, also this week, I'm chairman of a committee on primary health care and aging. We held a hearing with some really wonderful witnesses on a crisis that gets very little discussion. There's a lot of talk about health care, the fact that we're the only nation in the industrialized world that doesn't guarantee health care to all people. We spend more than almost than every other country, and our outcomes are not particularly good. But in the midst of that whole discussion, we don't talk about dental care. And dental care is a huge, huge issue. And the bottom line is that we have millions and millions and millions of Americans. You have people, I'm sure, listening to this show right now who have major dental problems. They don't get any Medicaid coverage. They can't afford private insurance. They're not getting the care that they need. We got kids who are staying home from school because they're in pain right now. Dental problems are as serious a problem as asthma is for kids. The truth is that dental care and lack of dental care and pain that kids have with tooth decay and cavities is even a more serious problem. But we don't pay attention to that. So we're going to introduce legislation that will be quite comprehensive in making sure that more people gain access to dental care in this country. Another issue I wanted to say a word on is, as chairman of the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs, right now the VA is undertaking a very good, I think, outreach effort, and that is to explain to veterans, we have 22 million veterans in this country, what type of health care and other programs they are entitled to. Many veterans just do not know that, so I would urge them to go to the VA website, which has been updated recently and significantly improved. Find out whether you're entitled to VA health care and what other benefits you might be entitled to. The VA has a good health care system, depending upon income eligibility. Certainly, if you're service-connected, you're entitled to free health care at the VA. Depending on your income level, you're entitled to either free health care or modest co-payments. But it's something that veterans should explore. And my committee is now looking at a number of issues, including how we might be able to expand eligibility to the veterans of this country. So, Tom, those are some of the issues that we're looking at in D.C. right now.
Wow. Bernie, I was Senator Sanders, excuse me, I was reading the U.N. Charter, Article 2, Section 4, which is the one where it says that a country can't bomb another country. Mm-hmm. And I discovered let me just read this to you. I'm curious your thoughts on this. All members of the United Nations shall refrain in their international relations from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state.
Well, I think the importance of that is the following. Among the many concerns that I think that Americans have about getting involved in this incredibly bloody, 100,000 people have already been killed. Millions have been displaced. And Tom, you know, we know that Assad is a butcher. He has made billions in his country, which is one of the poorest in the world, off his own people. But on the other side, you have a significant part of the opposition. We think 20-25% that are Islamic fundamentalists, and a good number of them are actually affiliated with Al-Qaeda. But the point that you raise is the danger of setting a precedent or establishing a modern precedent where a country unilaterally goes to war. What does that mean in terms of the future? What do we say to China? What do we say to Russia if they suddenly invade another country to go to war?
Excellent point. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Bernie will be taking your calls next, right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Sanders.Senate.gov is Bernie's website. It is an incredible resource. Be sure to check it out. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line taking your calls. And Carol, listening on KPHX in Apache Junction, Arizona, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Senator Sanders. I wanted to talk about the wildfires we've been having out west here. And what is needed is an appropriation of more money for equipment and supplies and more manpower. And it's just so unacceptable to lose so much of our forest for not having enough money. We need fleets of slurry tankers and stations to fill them with the slurry. We need manpower, and we ought to be having our firefighters clearing areas in the off-season. And it's just, it's worse than penny wise and pound foolish to not fund the protection of our forest. We're turning our oxygen producers into carbon dioxide, and that's bad for the whole planet. It's worse than criminal. Could you please bring some attention to this? I know the funding arises in the House, but could you please see that some decent money is finally put in at the federal level to protect
our forest? Thank you very much, Carol. I agree with you. What we're seeing is an unbelievable tragedy. We have seen in recent years in Arizona and elsewhere more severe forest fires and more frequent forest fires. And Carol is absolutely right. These incredibly brave firefighters who are out there risking their lives need support, and she's right. We're being penny-wise and dollar-foolish by not supporting them, and all of us remember the tragic loss that the folks in Arizona suffered a few months ago when so many of their firefighters were killed in the line of duty. So she's right. The broader issue is to ask why we are having the kinds of forest fires that we're having, why we're having the kind of droughts that we're having, and I think that takes us to the other issue of global warming, and that if we don't get our act together in cutting greenhouse gas emissions, you're going to see more of that in the years to come. But Carol is absolutely right.
Cindy in Studio City, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Cindy.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. What I wanted to talk about was the situation with the chemical weapons, and something I haven't heard addressed too much. In that the we've used a lot of we've been using chemical weapons for innumerable years. And in very recently in Gaza with, and I think it seems so hypocritical of us to talk in terms of them using chemical weapons and we're so incensed by it, when in fact we have been guilty of it. And then they talk in terms of international law. When Bush was in power, he dismissed international law out of hand. And
Cindy, is there a question for Senator Sanders, sir?
Yes. I wondered how that hasn't gotten into the conversation.
Well, let me take your second question first, and Tom and I just discussed this a moment ago. If one nation decides to attack unilaterally another nation, and not in self-defense, but an aggressive attack, that is in violation of international law, and the United States clearly has violated that. And one of the reasons I was strongly opposed to the United States getting militarily intervening in Syria is precisely that. It is the kind of precedent that it says in violation of international law. In terms of chemical weapons, now, I think the United States has not used chemical weapons in the same way that Assad allegedly has. But in fact, what many people don't know is the United States kind of looked the other way when our old pal Saddam Hussein was at war with Iran. And I think the evidence is pretty clear that the United States was more than aware. And in fact, some companies were supplying Saddam Hussein with some of the ingredients for chemical warfare, which he used very heavily against Iranian troops and then later on against his own people. So the United States and other countries, I think, were complicit in enabling Saddam Hussein to do that and, in fact, looking the other way. But having said all of that, chemical weapons are absolutely terrible, and I think as a world we've got to do everything that we can to enforce the treaty on banning chemical weapons, and it would be a great thing for this country, for the people of Syria, and for the world if we got chemical weapons out of Syria.
Patrick in Oakland City, Indiana. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, Tom. Nice to talk to you. Senator Sanders, my question to you is, I thought at one time the Constitution reflected that the people should elect the Supreme Court justices, if I'm not mistaken.
No.
And how come, when did it become, I'm wrong on that, Tom?
Yeah, they've been appointed since the founding of the country.
Well, why can't they change it to the people who elect the Supreme Court justice? Because that what they did with the corporations, you know, making them a person is beyond my comprehension. I thought that was a joke.
Well, Patrick, I think, as Tom indicated, the Constitution is pretty clear about how we go about nominating and approving Supreme Court members of the Supreme Court. But I think what we have right now is, I think most people understand, is a very right-wing Supreme Court that is very attuned to the needs of big money and large corporations. And I think Patrick is referring to this disastrous Citizens United decision in which five members of the Supreme Court a few years ago decided that corporations are people and in the name of freedom of speech presumably have the right to buy elections. And I think the overwhelming majority of the American people disagree with that ruling, and we're going to do our best to overturn it. But we are where we are right now, and I think the hope is that President Obama will make strong nominations as those openings arise to the Supreme Court, and we can turn around these right-wing decisions.
It's Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program. It's the first hour of Friday, and Senator Sanders will be back with more of your questions on our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Be sure to check out Bernie's website. It's a great news source. You can interact with the senator and his staff. And also, you can sign some of his petitions and just see what's going on.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And that website, Bernie's website, is sanders.senate.gov. Welcome back to the place where despair is not an option. It's the Tom Hartman Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls for the hour. And Bernie, you're still here with us?
I am right here.
Great. Cindy in Fort Madison, Iowa, listening on AM 760 out of Denver. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you for taking my call. Senator Sanders, I have a question about the Obamacare. I was just wondering if you do sign up for that. If you're self-insured, is there going to be a penalty assessed if you would happen to sell your home down the road?
Sell your home down.
Yeah, there's a tax. I know the answer to this,
okay.
Cindy. There's a provision that was passed as part of Obamacare that on any capital gain of over $250,000, after all deductions and everything else have been taken, there is, I believe it's 3%. It might be 1%, but there's I'm pretty sure it's a 3% tax on all the money after the $250,000. And the Republicans have turned this into a talking point by saying that if you sell your house, you're going to have to pay an Obamacare tax on the profit. Well, yes, if the profit on the sale of your house is over a $250,000 profit. So that's.
And we think relatively few people.
That's right. This is going to affect, you know, 0.001%.
Let me just jump in on that because.
And it also affects stock sales and things.
You know, in terms of what's going on in Washington right now, our Republican friends really have very little to say about the important issues facing our country. In fact, right now, there is some question whether John Boehner, who's the Speaker of the House, could even get a Republican majority to go forward in order to prevent shutting down the United States government. And because many of these guys, the most extreme right-wing members among them, really almost don't believe in government at all. Many of them would like to privatize or do away with Social Security. They want to make massive cuts in Medicare, in Medicaid, in education. Now they're focusing on Obamacare. Let's be clear about health care. The United States today is the only major nation on earth that does not guarantee health care to all people as a right of citizenship. The current health care system spends in this country almost twice as much per capita on health care as do the people of any other nation, and yet our outcomes are not particularly good, and a lot of that has to do with the role that private insurance companies play. I voted for Obamacare for a number of reasons, not because it is my desired approach. I believe in a Medicare for All single-payer program, but it was a step forward, providing health insurance to 30 million more people, putting a lot of money into disease prevention, etc. But I think the bankruptcy of the Republican Party is such that they have nothing to say. They have nothing to say about high unemployment and the need to create new jobs in this country, nothing to say about the fact that more and more people are working at low wages and the need to raise the minimum wage. In fact, many of Republicans in the House and the Senate now believe, I know folks think I'm kidding, but I'm not, I would suspect that a strong majority of Republicans now believe in abolishing the concept of the minimum wage. So they don't want to raise the minimum wage. They want to do away with the minimum wage. And if people in this country are forced to work for $3 or $4 an hour, that's just fine for them. So what you're seeing is these guys have nothing to say about anything important except more tax breaks for the rich, more money for the Defense Department, and what they are latching onto as their political point right now, their main talking point, is Obamacare.
Jim, in West Palm Beach, Florida, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, I wanted to bring it to Senator Sanders' attention about the H-1B visas that are being promoted in this new immigration bill. And one thing I wanted to show more about them was, or explain more about them, was that this LCA application condition report that you have to fill out to get before you submit to get an H-B-1 visa entry into the country, you have to submit a labor condition application. And I went on the line, and it used to be that all this was public information, and the computer people on the internet used to download this and start looking around, and they would find jobs by looking at this information because they'd find a company that was looking for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened when Bush got in office is they took it offline, as they did a lot of things. That's just even before 9/11 they started doing this. And so what happened was we didn't know what was happening in there. So now I just looked on there. It took me a long time to find it. So in 2007, I downloaded that report of a list of all the LCA applications, and it amounted to 469,596 for just 2007. The real kicker is once you get in there and you start looking at all these, I mean, I never realized, like in Vermont, they don't have any program analyst there. They have to bring them all in from outside the country.
Jim, let me just interrupt you. I agree with the basic tenet of what you're saying, but let me kind of explain it to many of our listeners. What Jim is talking about is a program. It's a guest worker program. And this was hotly debated in the immigration bill and has been hotly debated for many years. Here's the thesis. H-1B deals with higher tech workers. And the thesis of corporate America is that we do not have in this country enough workers to do computer-based type work or more sophisticated work than that. And what's absolutely imperative is that we go abroad to other countries around the world to bring these people in. Now, on television, when you hear that, it is, don't we want these brilliant guys from China and Russia and all over the world to come in and help us create thousands and thousands of jobs in America? Well, we do. But what most of these jobs are about are not these, you know, high-tech geniuses. These are jobs that many well-trained, well-educated Americans can do. And the point that Jim is making is that under the guise of having a desperate need for these workers, we're going all over the world. Many of these workers are coming into this country working at lower wages than American workers are making. So I agree with the thrust of what Jim is saying. Point being, should companies be able to go abroad if they really cannot find an American worker to do that job? The answer is yes. But in many cases, they can, A, if they're serious about looking for an American worker, doing the advertising, doing the outreach that's necessary, and second of all, if they're willing to pay for an American worker. It's a huge issue. It's not only dealing with high-tech workers through H-1B, it's dealing for lower-wage workers. It's a variety of guest worker programs will allow entry-level workers. How many Americans think that we desperately need low-wage, entry-level workers to be coming into this country when we have 20% youth unemployment in this country and 40% youth unemployment among the African-American communities. Many people think that it's a lot better idea to allow our kids to get some of these entry-level jobs so they can begin their careers rather than opening the doors to low-wage foreign workers.
Al, in Rome, Wisconsin, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Ah, Bernie.
Hey, Al, how are you?
Ah, could be better. Hey, I've got a big problem with the VA. What it comes down to is I can't get what I need. I can't really use what they want to give. They almost murdered me in a VA hospital. And what they did to travel pay, it makes it impossible for me to get to a hospital.
Okay.
Who the hell did this?
Okay, well, Al, I know the issue that you're talking about, and we are rectifying it. What Al is saying is the VA recently changed the rules so that if people are going to a VA hospital to see doctors that they've had for years, what they're suggesting is they will not pay the cost of that travel, not provide the travel allowance, because they want people to go locally to a local community-based outreach clinic. Al, what we are working on is ending that rule and grandfathering it. If you have a doctor that you like in the medical center that you're going to, you should be able to continue going to that doctor. So that's an issue we are working on, and I think you're going to see a change in that rule.
Randall in Heartland, Michigan. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, hi, Senator Sanders. Tom, first of all, I've heard over the years that you mentioned that you were a guest in some anti-war protests in Lansing.
Yes.
I was probably a guest along with you.
On Grand River Avenue in East Lansing.
In East Lansing, right.
Yeah. Okay.
And also, you also said you used to be a midnight rock and roll disc jockey?
Yeah, I was. I did that for...
In Williamson?
In Lansing. I was...
in Lansing. Okay, because yeah. I met somebody once. Anyway, for Senator Sanders, on the news that Tom had, he said you were wanting to expand dental coverage for Medicaid patients?
Yes.
And I'm a dentist, and I do right now currently provide care for dental patients. But I'm about to close my office because they don't pay me enough to cover the costs of the procedures. And, I mean, it's very upsetting because there's a huge population that needs to be served, as you identified. What kind of measures are possible to
be
reimbursed?
One of the provisions in the legislation that we will introduce will be to raise reimbursement rates. That is certainly one of the factors. So that's what has to happen. That's one of the factors that we have got to deal with. Reimbursement rates for dental care under Medicaid are too low. So that is one of the issues that we are going to address. But one of the concerns that I have now, and the rates vary state by state, states make those decisions, is that relatively few dentists today are serving the underserved population and Medicaid recipients.
We'll be back with more of Senator Bernie Sanders' answers to your questions in Brunch with Bernie here on the Tom Hartman Program. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. It is a gold mine of resources. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's it's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. And David in Halfway, Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, thank you, Bernie. I was wondering if you could please say something on the Senate floor or get some senators to say something to President Obama about what Tom mentioned the day before yesterday about him wanting to hand out this blanket pardon to the Bush administration. You know, and we're talking about the 99% and the 1% as far as the judicial tier system is, you know, that everybody walks away scot-free, and this is like just in case anybody, you know, comes up with something, a pardon for just the future, you know. I was wondering if you could say something on the Senate floor or get some senators to say something.
Tom, help me out here. What was...
About a week ago, the Obama administration submitted a brief to a federal judge requesting immunity from prosecution for war crimes for I believe it was seven senior officials in the Bush administration, basically saying we just don't want this happening in the criminal court system in the United States. And I don't know if it's been ruled on or not.
Well, I don't know the details, so I'm not going to refrain from commenting on that. But I think clearly, you know, what we know right now is that at the very best, there was an enormous amount of intentional misleading of the American people, which got us into that war in Iraq. And I just want to say one word about that. I mean, all of us mourn the loss of 6,600 brave Americans, but what is not fully appreciated is it's not just the loss of life that is a result of that war, and that's Americans, not to mention God knows how many Iraqis and Afghanistan folks who have died in the war. We are looking, Tom, at hundreds and hundreds of thousands of men and women who have come home from Iraq and Afghanistan. I speak as chairman of the VA committee, who are dealing with traumatic brain injury and who are dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder. And at the end of the day, what economists are now estimating is that those wars, by the time we take care of our last veteran, will cost us between $4 to $6 trillion. $4 to $6 trillion, 6,600 dead, many hundreds of thousands suffering PTSD and traumatic brain injury. Cost of those wars are unbelievable.
That is incredible. Sharon in Cleveland, Ohio, listening on Progressive Voices. Hey, Sharon, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, Bernie, Senator Sanders. I was listening to your show, and I wondered if the adults will be covered in your dental bill that you are proposing.
I'm sorry, Sharon, say that again, please.
Oh, I wondered if you will be mentioning in your bill for dental care a provision to help adults get dental care.
Yes, absolutely. Right now, what you have is Medicaid for lower-income Americans. Medicaid covers children, but the nature of the reimbursement rate is dependent upon each state. Some states do okay, other states do not. But Medicaid does not cover adults. Some states will do it minimally, and some states will not. But we don't have mandatory coverage, and we do address that. Right now, as I said earlier, Sharon, I think that this issue of dental care is an issue that does not that Congress and the White House do not fully appreciate. We asked people on our email list, sanders.senate.gov is our website, just to tell us stories about the problems they're having with dental care. And we had some 1,200 folks from Vermont, from all over this country, writing to us, talking about the horrendous difficulty they're having in being able to afford or access dental care. So the legislation that we're offering is quite comprehensive, and it would make it much, much easier for adults, for veterans, for seniors to get the dental care that they need.
John in Fresno, California, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, Senator Sanders, I'd like to just go back for a moment to the earlier caller about the HB1 visas.
Yes.
I don't know why the Democrats don't simply say, hey, we're big fans of the free market system, free market capitalism, just like all you right-wing Republicans. So the way we're going to solve the shortage of high-tech workers is we're going to let the market work. We're going to let the price of engineers and scientists and all that get bid up and up, because if there's a shortage, the price of that commodity ought to go up. And over time, the free market will solve it all.
Yeah. More people will go to college to get those high-paid jobs.
What John is saying is an interesting point. And here's what he's saying, and he's right, is that right now the theory of the free market is when there is a demand out there, employers will raise wages in order to attract workers. But what is happening is the way employers in corporate America are responding to that is they are saying, look, if there's a shortage, why do I want to have to raise wages? Let's just bring people from the rest of the world into the United States of America. And that way we can keep wages low. And John is absolutely right. So I voted for the immigration bill this time. I voted against it last time for exactly the reason that John and the previous caller had raised. I voted for it this time, expressing very strong concern about many of these guest worker programs, because I was able to get into it, among other things, $1.5 billion program for young people in this country to provide jobs for them. Plus, there are other some decent provisions in the bill. But this issue of the guest worker concept, the idea that in this country today where real unemployment is close to 14%, what we desperately need is hundreds and hundreds of thousands of entry-level workers to be coming in from all over the world, or high-tech workers to be coming in, I think is a lot of nonsense. And I think the more Americans learn about that, the more they will be opposed to that. But John's point is right. What he is saying essentially is, by opening the door to allow foreign workers to come in, what you're doing is ending the supply and demand dynamic here in this country and keeping wages lower than they should be.
Senator, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, my pleasure.
It's great having you on. Senator Bernie Sanders, be sure to check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. And it's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be back. Whatever topic you would like to talk about, I got a few news stories to share with you, and then we'll get into it.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So I mentioned this to Bernie. I didn't want to get into a protracted conversation with him about it. Bernie's opposed to the war in Syria, or to expanding that war in Syria or getting involved in it. But and his big point, I think it's really an important one, is that, as Merle Haggard said, let's rebuild America first. But there's this thing. I'm reading Article 2, Section 4 of the UN Charter. We're all talking, or there's a lot of conversation about how under the UN Charter, and this is something that President Putin referred to in his op-ed in the New York Times day before yesterday, that it is against international law for a country which is not either being attacked, has been attacked, or imminently under attack. It's against the law for them to attack another country. In other words, you can't attack a country unless it's in self-defense. But when you read the language, it says that not only is it a crime to attack another country, it's a crime to threaten to attack another country. Which means that should the United States House and Senate vote an authorization to the president to use force in Syria, at that moment, I mean, before a single bomb has gone off, at that moment, we have committed an international war crime under Article 2, Section 4 of the UN Charter. And arguably, if the president says, I'm going to do this anyway, or I'm going to do it, or just I'm threatening to do it, which I don't frankly think he's stepped over that line yet, but we're dancing all over the place. You know, all over the edges of it. I mean, here is the language. Besides the authorization of the use of force by the Security Council as indicated above, member states can use force when exercising their right to self-defense. According to Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, member states can exercise the right to self-defense only in the event of a, quote, armed attack, end quote, and, quote, until the Security Council has taken measures necessary to maintain international peace and security, end quote. Otherwise, Article 2, Section 4 of the Charter states that all members of the United Nations shall refrain in their international relations from the threat or use of force against the territorial integrity or political independence of any state. Why is nobody mentioning this? I mean, this seems to me like a big deal. Fascinating piece in The Atlantic, by the way. JFK versus the military is the title of it. And it's basically, well, it summarizes in the opening, John Kennedy, you know, and how his PT-109 was sunk in 1943. 17 years later, he was the president. And it says, in the White House, he fought and defeated his most determined military foes just across the Potomac, the members of the Pentagon's Joint Chiefs of Staff. In comparison, Nikita Khrushchev was a pushover. And then they just go through each one of these guys and how they wanted JFK to use military weapons. They wanted to run around the country giving speeches. JFK reined them in. How they, you know, it's really quite startling. And it makes you wonder what kind of pressure President Obama is under from these guys. Because you get it. There are a bunch of people who have defined their being as warriors. That's all they do. Their life has no meaning if they're not in a war. And Jack Kennedy actually fought these guys, backed them down, shut them up, put them in a box, and made them very angry. I hope President Obama has the courage to speak, you know, to speak back to the Joint Chiefs. Joan in Oakland, California. Hey, Joan, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's great to talk to you. I've often watched your show.
Thank you.
I was hoping I could have spoken to Senator Saunders, but unfortunately, I'm not able to. So I'm going to ask you, by the way, I agree with everything you've just said, but is there any governing body, such as the United Nations or any other agencies, that can do something about the United States' presence regarding negotiations over the Syrian alleged use of chemical weapons on its people, considering that we here in the United States have killed, literally murdered, more people using chemical weapons than any other nations on Earth?
I don't think we've killed more people using chemical weapons than any other nation. Saddam Hussein killed 1 million Iranians. And
came from the United States, though.
Pardon?
They provided Saddam with the chemical weapons.
No, we provided him with targeting information. The chemical weapons he bought from Belgium, Holland, and Italy. But, you know, the point stands. Ronald Reagan helped him use those chemical weapons. So I must have missed something. What was the essence of your question?
Well, basically, the United States, John Kerry and Obama, the administration is at the negotiating tables as far as how to punish or whether to punish President Assad or Syria because of their alleged use of
right.
chemical weapons.
Right.
And yet we have used chemical weapons on other nations,
right.
and I don't hear anyone calling out for our punishment.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, we're not doing it right now, so typically you don't punish a country for something that they did a long time ago. I mean, I think that the use of napalm and Agent Orange in Vietnam was a war crime. I'm sorry?
What about in Fallujah in 2005?
Were we using chemical weapons in Fallujah?
As far as I know, that's what I had heard on the news. That
I know we bombed the hell out of the city, but... It may be. Joan, I don't know why nobody's trying to hold us to account when we do those kinds of things. I think throughout the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, there have been times when we have behaved atrociously. Certainly the stuff that everybody knows about, Abu Ghraib, you know, the tortures, the extraordinary renditions, the black cells, the black ops, the the assassinations, I mean, all this ongoing stuff, and now the drone strikes. And I'm not seeing, you know, the United States is the empire. We're the most powerful nation in the world, hands down, bar none. And
does power give us the right to police other nations and decide how they live or how they what they are supposed to do and not do when we are doing it ourselves?
No, it absolutely doesn't. It absolutely doesn't. But what it does do is it intimidates. I mean, there's other nations that need trade with us. They need to buy things from us. They need to sell things to us. And I think that and frankly, you know, some of the smaller ones maybe don't even want to get in our crosshairs. None of this is to justify any of this, Joan. I think it's just the political reality that we're the big guy on the block. I frankly think that means that we have more of an obligation to behave more in a more Gandhian fashion. Joan, thank you for the call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Anything Goes Friday. Give us a shout. 866-987-THOM. We'll be right back with more of your calls. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations and the billionaires, or at least a few of them, you know, the cranky right wing ones, would really rather you didn't know all about. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. And Ron in Windham, New York. Hey, Ron. What's up?
Hi, Tom.
Happy Anything Goes Friday. Happy Friday the 13th, for that matter.
I know. I'm a sailor. It's not good auspiciously.
My understanding of the history of Friday the 13th is that, are you familiar with the story of Esther and Haman in the Bible?
No.
Well, there was this, Esther was the, a queen in, Mesopotamia or wherever it was, I forget the country, and she was Jewish, and the king was, of course, not, and there was this guy named Haman who was the, you know, kind of head of the royal court, and he wanted to kill all the Jews. And Esther had an uncle named, as I recall, named Mordecai, who was always sitting at the gate of the city, you know, telling people, repent. And so Haman went to the king and said, you know, I'd like to kill this guy Mordecai. And the king said, okay, fine. And so Haman built this giant gallows, and he was going to have this public execution. Esther finds out about this. She's horrified. She goes to the king and she says, you know, you've got your guy Haman is going to kill my relative, you know, and others of my family. Why is this? And the king says, really, you know, Haman has been lying to me. You know, he misrepresented this to me because Haman had told him that the Jews were trying to overthrow him and they weren't. And so on this one day that Haman was going to kill Mordecai, instead, the king ordered that Mordecai would be put on a donkey and led around the town, and everybody would applaud him and celebrate him, and then Haman would be hung. And that's how it played out. And my understanding is that happened on a Friday the 13th. So that was something that was celebrated by Jews. But when the Catholics came to power, they said, wait a minute, we don't like what the Jews did. This, I'm talking like, you know, 1,000 years ago. And so they made Friday the 13th a bad day. Now, there's a bunch of other stories about why Friday the 13th is considered bad. But almost all of them, you track them back and you find that somebody thought it was a really, really lucky day, and somebody who didn't like them thought it was a bad day. I've always found it to be a lucky day. I've gone out of my way to start companies and sign contracts on the 13th or even on a Friday the 13th. So, but you're a sailor. What's the bad omen of Friday the 13th for a sailor?
Well, you never leave port on Friday the 13th.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, that's the basic law.
Very interesting. Well, I guess I don't take the boat out today. But anyway, okay. So, Ron, what'd you call about?
Thanks for the story. It's always amazing to hear you and your stories.
Oh, yeah. You can read it in the Book of Esther in the Bible. It's a fascinating story.
I'll look it up. Look it up, sure. But I've got two questions and a comment. The first question is, do you think that we should hold the universities and colleges responsible for creating the ethos of greed and culture in a nation that has created the debacle on Wall Street and the nation and the world?
Mm-hmm.
That's one question. And the other question is regarding the chemical weapons. If all signatory nations agree chemical weapons are harmful from use, why don't they make manufacture of them illegal?
The treaty that bans them also bans their manufacture and their storage. So that's already the case. It is illegal to manufacture them. With regard to your question about the universities, my concern about the universities in the United States is that the business schools in our country are in many cases, and perhaps even in most cases, there's been several good documentary reports on this, and I don't have one right in front of me right now, so I can't give you the statistics, but we did a program on this almost a year ago where we had on one of the people who had written one of these reports. And what they found was that Koch brother-funded right-wing groups and other groups that were, quote, pro-business groups, Chamber of Commerce groups and whatnot, have been subsidizing professors at universities, and they say to the university, we will give you this money if you let us pick the professor and if you let us pick the curriculum. And so our students are going in and taking what they think are just simple business courses or simple econ courses, and what they are learning is this libertarian philosophy, this Chicago School economics that was developed in 1946 by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and about 40 of America's largest Fortune 500 corporations who invented the word libertarianism in order to justify policies that would basically devastate the middle class and make the rich richer. And so, yes, I think that our colleges are responsible for that culture of greed. And I think a big part of that is that the very greedy people and the very wealthy greedy people have been moving our colleges in that direction very, very aggressively. And that's something we need to do something about. So, Ron, thanks a lot for the call. Cora in Taos, New Mexico, listening on KVOT. Hey, Cora.
Yeah, I think it's time that we start to make our government responsible and not sit around and wait for somebody like the UN to do it. I think part of it we started with, you know, blocking this immediacy to war, but we need to keep up the pressure.
I agree. We have to tip the hat to President Obama for at least tossing this back to the House of Representatives and the Senate when the War Powers Act of 1974 actually gave him the authority to do it.
Well, we need to change that too.
Yes, I agree. And we had Congressman Peter DeFazio on the program, I think it was yesterday, pointing out that he has introduced legislation to strip the War Powers Act or to modify it so that the president can't just unilaterally go to war in violation of the UN. So, as Richard Nixon did when he bombed Cambodia, which is what provoked the War Powers Act. So, anyway.
Yeah, it's not just that, but, you know, it's the NSA, and I heard something yesterday that the NSA for years has been giving raw data to Israel.
Yes.
This isn't just the numbers, it's conversations and names.
Yes, I read that same report. I can't, attest to the veracity of it, but I have no reason to doubt it. And Israel is not part of this group of five nations, the five ears or eyes or whatever they call themselves. So that's raised a lot of eyebrows. We'll see where that goes. Thanks, Cora.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
It's Anything Goes Friday. Back with more of your calls right after this. Your media support group for We the People, the Tom Hartman Program. One of our callers today is going to receive a free signed copy of my book, Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country. When Shano gets the sudden instinct or has a tingle in his leg or whatever he does, however he figures it out. John in Chilmark, Massachusetts. Hey, John, what's up?
Oh, not too much, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine.
Great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for all you do. The only thing, the comment would be, the only thing I can see good out of this financial crisis is 4 years ago, I had enough time away from work that I could watch your show, and it's really been eye-opening, and I thank you for it.
You're welcome.
What I wanted to say was, is that fossil fuels, as you know, are old hat. gone by the way of the horse and buggy. We've got to get away from them. Right now, we probably still need fuel for airplanes and trucks and locomotives and stuff, but burning it for electricity really doesn't make much sense, especially seeing as we can produce it either wind or solar.
Right.
My question would be, back when they came up with the idea of the TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority,
right.
Who was the one that put that together? Was that a government?
I believe that was FDR, but I could be wrong. I shouldn't speak off the top of my head like that.
Well, I don't know either.
Yeah.
But
it was a government thing. I mean, you know, it was organized by government. So let me just take a quick look here.
Well, that's what I thought, and I was wondering. Of course, what it did was provide very cheap electricity for industry and business back then.
Yeah, it's a federally owned corporation created by Congress in May of 1933 to develop the Tennessee Valley affected by the Great Depression.
So basically, you're looking at Congress having to do this again.
Yeah.
I don't know why we couldn't do this again. The same idea as the TVA, only build solar farms.
Oh, absolutely.
We have tons of room.
I think that what we should do, there's a much simpler way to do it, and that's to do it the way the Germans did it. The way that the Germans did it is they said, If the power company wants to build a new nuclear power plant, the cost over a 10-year period of building that nuclear power plant is roughly 7 times the cost of the electricity that they produce during that 10-year period, okay, to build and operate that plant. So how do we recapture that cost and generate as much electricity as a nuclear power plant would? So they did a two-step process. The first step was the German government passed a law that said that banks pretty much had to or could actually, but they were backed up by the government. They, you know, there was a no loss provision. So if the loans went bad, the banks never got hurt. So they had to provide low interest loans, like a 2% loan to any homeowner to put solar panels on the roof of their house. And these were 10-year mortgages, basically, 10-year loans to solarize your house, solar panels, batteries, the whole bit, right? And then they said to the electric companies, over the 10-year lifetime of that loan, when you buy electricity back from the homeowner, when their home is making more electricity than it uses, which is typically during the daytime, you have to pay the homeowner 7 times the cost of the electricity that you sell to them, so 7 times retail. At the end of 10 years, the goal was to have created the equivalent of 2 nuclear power plants at the cost to the power company of 2 nuclear power plants and thus eliminate the need for the building of 2 nuclear power plants, which is what the German government was looking at. We're going to need 2 more nukes over the next decade. It was so successful. I mean, you look at pictures. I don't know if Google Earth does it or not, but it's like you look at pictures of just any town in Germany today compared to like 20 years ago. And, you know, about a third of all the houses have solar panels all over their roofs, you know, the south-facing roofs. And they are now generating so much electricity that it is cheap. It is, you know, they're having to build a new smart grid. This is the new challenge that they have because they have such a surplus of electricity. And in that 10-year period, they ended the program. They scaled the program back because they had created the equivalent of 10 or 12 nuclear power plants worth of electricity. They got more electricity than they know what to do with right now.
Well, I
didn't cost the government anything, and the power companies essentially paid for it. You know, it didn't cost the homeowners anything. The power companies essentially paid for it, but they got, you know, a 50-year production of electricity. These solar panels have a 50-year lifespan as opposed to a nuclear power plant that's only 30 years. Pardon my interrupting you.
No, and like I said, I've been watching your program, so I am familiar with what Germany has been doing. I think last week or the week before, you mentioned that they were shutting down a couple of coal-fired plants.
Yep.
Because the price of electricity had dropped so much it wasn't economically feasible. But my point is if the government was able to do this back in the 30s under Roosevelt and take all of the Tennessee Valley, basically, I'm sure they had to displace quite a population that was living along the rivers, and make the investment of putting up all these dams and hydroelectric. I agree with you that we should decentralize our energy,
yeah,
and put up solar panels on our roofs. But why couldn't the government do the same thing? I mean, look at White Sands and a bunch of other places out,
sure,
the West that just has a bunch of land sitting there doing nothing but soaking up sun.
Right.
Of course, it makes too much sense for Congress to do so.
Well, we got the Mojave Desert out there. I mean, it's like, you know, if that sunlight, if you thought of it as oil, we've got Saudi Arabia just off the, you know, it's between California and Nevada and Arizona. I mean, it's incredible. And by the way, I think when Van Jones was the green czar at the White House, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that he was the guy who proposed that all federal buildings, all federally owned land, all federally owned buildings, put solar panels on their roofs, you know, turn their roofs into solar collectors. Like, let's lead the way, you know, start the process. There's so much that could be done, but now in this age of sequestration and Republicans blocking absolutely everything, there's no chance of any of this happening with the Congress that we have. We've got to, even though the Democrats, you know, the House of Representatives, more people voted for Democrats for the House of Representatives in the last election than they did for Republicans, but still the Republicans control the House because of the gerrymandering that they were able to pull off in 2010. And so, you know, we have to get politically active and we have to get a progressive House of Representatives. John, thanks for the call. Amy in St. Mary's, Georgia. Hey, Amy.
Yes, hi. Just to add to what you were saying about Germany, do you remember that Fox News made the famous statement that, well, Germany has a lot of sun, we don't have that, and it's one of the cloudiest countries in Europe.
It is the cloudiest country in Europe.
But also, yeah, a couple callers ago, a gal named Joan was mentioning, you said chemical weapons, she was talking about Fallujah, and I know what she was
right.
talking about was depleted uranium. So
Yeah.
Semantics.
Yeah,
you know, it is chemical, and I mean, it's worse in a way,
yeah,
you know, because of its long-lasting effects.
Yes.
I wanted to speak more about the JFK story you had.
Mm-hmm.
Brothers, the book Brothers, about him and Robert,
mm-hmm,
that goes into that in quite a bit of length. And when he was facing off with the Joint Chiefs of Staff during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the lead-up, one of the Joint Chiefs said to him, you're in deep doo-doo. He said it nose-to-nose with JFK.
Mm-hmm.
And JFK put his index finger right in the face of the Joint Chief and said, and you're right in it with me. And that kind of courage in today's world, I think, is difficult with a person like Obama, who is a very good person, I think, in many ways. But the power of the military-industrial complex is exponentially more than it was under JFK. And
yes,
to me, when someone becomes president, I think they are under a lot more pressure than any of us will ever know. And I don't think that's a way-out conspiracy theory. I mean, I'm 64 and I'm pretty level-headed, but I think when they get in there and they face what has taken over our country, I think it's very frightening, especially with two young gals like he has. I really don't think we'll ever truly know. And here we are coming up on the 50th anniversary of JFK, and I don't think we've ever seen all the records turned over that were promised to us years ago.
No.
You know, I'm a couple years older than you, but I remember that we were promised that everything would come out. And, you know, I'm getting the Kleenex ready for November 22nd. I mean, it's going to open wounds that have been opened, you know, with pretty much every anniversary. But I think the man had a lot of courage, but I think Obama would be superhuman to face off with what he's facing now.
Yeah. Well, you know, we elected him to a superhuman job, so let's hope he rises to the occasion. Point well made, Amy. Thank you. Dan in Orland Park, Illinois. Dan, got a minute to the break. Thanks for listening to WCPT.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. What's going on with California right now, passing or about to pass a $10 minimum wage? Doesn't seem like a Band-Aid to fix. It's a real wages and towards.
No, it's not a bandage, because what it'll do is it'll be an enormous economic stimulus for the state. You're going to have people, every single one of those people who's working for minimum wage is spending 100% of what they get. So there's going to be billions of dollars flooding into that state's economy.
Right. No, yeah, and I agree. I just think that, you know, legislation, instead of passing that, could do more towards passing like you talked previously about, you know, right to organize labor or in general for better wages.
No, we need we need to repeal Taft-Hartley and or pass the Employee Free Choice Act, card check. I'm totally with you. We've got to do that. We've got to bring democracy back into the workplace. Dan, thanks for the call. 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Well, the TVA was all over. Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, Kentucky, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia. They knew how to do things back in the day, you know? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is with us, brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com, Ellen Ratner's charity, where you can give a crystal heart made by women recovering from the effects of war in South Sudan. These are literally made by women who saw people killed in front of them. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
So what's going on in the world today?
Well, in Geneva, Secretary of State John Kerry described as constructive talks for the second day with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov on securing Syria's chemical weapons, and those talks could go into tomorrow and then will continue on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. Also today, a UN investigators said in a new report that Syrian government forces are systematically attacking hospitals and medical staff members and denying treatment to the sick and wounded from areas controlled or affiliated with the opposition. They also detailed the use of hospitals as torture centers by military intelligence.
Yikes.
It's really quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
Who
produced this report?
The United Nations Commission of Inquiry monitoring human rights in Syria.
Right. Okay. It's pretty. You can take it seriously then.
You can take this very seriously, indeed. Now, they do say the rebels have done some of these things also, but they really come down on the side of what the government has done. And they said they published the findings 2 days after a broader report on war crimes in Syria to draw attention to what they call an enduring and underreported trend. They say that by rejecting the irrefutable and universally accepted principle that those wounded in hostilities must be treated, the parties to the conflict in Syria are setting a dangerous precedent. And they just basically give chapter and verse of extraordinary attacks on hospitals shelled by artillery, attacks on civilians receiving treatment in hospital, medical personnel, people who are in hospitals, patients being tortured to death, detainees in hospitals becoming detainees, children being beaten, burned with cigarettes, subjected to torture, and then also the targeting of medical personnel being what they call one of the most insidious trends in the civil war. Government forces deliberately targeting medical personnel to gain military advantage by depriving the opposition of medical assistance for injuries sustained.
That's terrible.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Another interesting story, this coming back home today, is the top Democrat on the House Agriculture Committee, Representative Colin Peterson of Minnesota, is really wants a farm bill passed. Now, if there isn't one passed by October the 1st, there's a bit of a problem. So he wants to put some pressure on. So he's gone to and called Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack this week, and he suggested that the agency begin the process of implementing the 1949-era dairy policies that would take effect if Congress doesn't do anything on a farm bill by the beginning of October. And what this law does, it requires the Ag Department to manipulate the dairy market in such a way that milk is priced at a floor of roughly $39 per 100 pounds. And that figure would leave milk prices to roughly double at today's rates.
What's the benefit of this?
Well, his strategy is not to see that happen, but he wants to get the affected industry groups, particularly the International Dairy Foods Association, to start pressuring Speaker John Boehner and other Republican leaders to enact a bill preventing the cost hike and to get their act together and to pass a farm bill.
Uh-huh. So this is the stick in the old carrot stick part. The House of Representatives passed a farm bill. They stripped all of the money for food stamps for poor people and children out of it.
Correct.
But they kept the subsidies for millionaires, billionaires, politicians, movie stars, and ag corporations
in.
Did that pass the Senate?
Yes, the Senate has actually passed a farm bill with $4 billion of cuts to food stamps, but the House wanted one with $20 billion of cuts.
Okay, so there's nothing has been passed at all so far. They didn't just pass the halfway bill. Nothing has been passed.
No, they've done nothing.
Okay.
No. Huh. Meanwhile, Senator John Cornyn of Texas is demanding that Congress designate the 2009 Fort Hood shooting as a terrorist attack so the victims can qualify for benefits. Now, this is something that victims have been working on for some considerable time, right throughout the trial. In fact, they fought lawsuits against the government for this because the government has determined that it was basically a workplace shooting.
This is where this Muslim psychiatrist in the name of Islam killed a bunch of people thinking that he was helping the jihadist movement.
Right.
And
he killed 13 people, injured 13 more, and had ties to radical Islamic groups, said it was in the name of Islam, and Cornyn wants to get this designated a terrorist attack so that these victims will qualify for benefits, which they are being denied. And they have had payments for surgeries. These are military people. They've had payments for surgeries denied by the government.
Wow. Well, that shouldn't happen whether it's terrorists or not. I mean, even if it's the Son of Sam talking, you know, doing it because he's got voices in his head, you still, the victim should be taken care of.
Right. And they really have not been, it seems, in this case.
Okay.
Meantime, bloggers across the political spectrum are up in arms over the proposed Media Shield bill that the Senate Judiciary Committee passed yesterday.
Yes.
They say that this definition of a journalist is rubbish.
Yes. Well, once we begin defining journalists, even if it's a very, very broad and healthy definition, and I think that this is a fairly broad definition, what we have done is established a precedent for saying, okay, that freedom of the press thing in the First Amendment, here's the fence we're putting around it. And future legislatures can change the fence posts. And that, I think, is a very, very bad precedent. So I stand with those bloggers. Victoria Jones, thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. We'll be back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, flash floods in Colorado killed at least three people today, or yesterday, excuse me. People are being evacuated from their homes. One of the larger stations that carries this program live is AM 760 in Denver. And I just wanted to personally say y'all are in my prayers and thoughts, and to the extent that there may be some global warming element to this, we need to be increasingly emphasizing, you know, our atmosphere has 5% more moisture in it than it did when I was born, than it did through the previous 160,000 years of human history. 5% more moisture. When there's more moisture in the atmosphere not only traps heat more efficiently, but it's more unstable, and more moisture comes out of the atmosphere in those moments when it comes out. And so you have worse floods, worse tornadoes. You may not have as many, but they get bigger. And, you know, these tragedies, and this is, you know, this is just the beginning. I'm acutely aware of this stuff. Louise and I live in a 30-year-old boat in the harbor here in Washington, D.C., and, you know, it's a fairly fragile thing, you know. Boats are. It's like living in a trailer park, and in a lot of ways. I mean, little tiny kitchen, little tiny bathroom, but, and no closets, very few. But the point is that everybody in our marina, we all get to know each other, because when really heavy storms come through, people run around helping each other tie up their boats and double tie them and lash them down and batten the hatches and all that kind of. And, you know, if Sandy had turned west a day earlier than it did last year, I might have lost my home. And I mean, you know, it's just like, you know, it's time for us to start taking this stuff seriously. We're messing with our atmosphere. We're messing with our climate in a way that is not insignificant. So, anyhow, happy Friday the 13th. According to legend, Friday the 13th was also when the Knights Templar were ordered to be executed by, as I recall, the King of France. And do not go to KnightsTemplar.com, because if you do, you will discover with horror who really runs the world. KnightsTemplar.com. So anyhow, but it's Anything Goes Friday, so whatever you'd like to talk about. Lawrence in Berkeley, California. You wanted to talk about 9/11?
Sure. Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm well.
Yeah, you know, 9/11 is the so-called reason given for all the wars we've been in and the surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good idea we know who did it. I wanted to refer people to an organization called Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Yeah, it's one of the more credible and, you know, well-populated by scientific types as opposed to just, you know, average Joe serious research organizations.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's got 2,000 architects and engineers and a video that's narrated by Ed Asner, if you want to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And the address is ae911truth.org. That's ae911truth.org. But what these 2,000 engineers are about is saying that these buildings could not possibly have come down by being hit by airplanes or by fire. There had to have been an internal planned explosion. And the best thing on their front page is, you know, a picture worth a thousand words. They have a picture of building number 7 coming down in slow motion.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see that, there's just no longer any doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Because, first of all, there's no fire. And second of all...
I understood there was a fire. I understood that they had
thousands
of gallons of diesel fuel.
You can't see it. There's nothing visible.
Yeah.
The fire came from the other buildings which were hit. You know, building number 7, of course, was not hit by an airplane, but some of the debris, it was 47 stories high, and some of the debris from the 110-story buildings landed on it.
Right, and caught on fire the tanks of diesel fuel that were stored on the roof or in the top floor to power the emergency generators. At least my understanding is that's the official explanation.
But that is what is so amazing about this picture.
Mm-hmm.
It was hit on the top, and the tanks were on the top, but it's really clear in slow motion that this building is collapsing from the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the top is completely intact, as I say, with no visible fire, and it is collapsing. You can see it collapse, whereas the top, three-quarters of it are completely intact.
So who would do this, Lawrence, and why?
Okay, that's a really good question. The Project for a New American Century, which was Dick Cheney's pet organization.
Actually, Jeb Bush was a signatory.
Yes, them too. Yeah. They wrote a paper, their manifesto in the year 2000, which said that we have 7 Middle Eastern regimes that we want to change. We want to redraw the map completely of the Mideast.
And that the world will not agree with our efforts until there's another Pearl Harbor-like event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Until there's another Pearl Harbor.
But that, you know, just
because elected.
Just because a group of crackpots are out, you know, beating a drum doesn't mean that they wired, you know, office buildings in New York City to come collapsing down on by coincidence on the same day that a bunch of Saudi nationals decided to hijack planes and fly them into them.
Well,
isn't that a lot of coincidence?
They may have been crackpots, but they were the vice president. They were the secretary of defense. They were all kinds of people.
I stand by my adjective.
What?
I stand by my adjective.
Crackpots? Yeah, I agree. But these were very, very powerful crackpots.
Sure.
And as I say, just look at the picture.
Yeah.
You know, it's coming straight down in its own footprint. If there were fires that were starting on the top, this wouldn't happen because, then you'd see something happening on the top where it was hit. But it's coming down from the bottom. And all you have to do is look at a lot of pictures of controlled demolition, and this is exactly the same.
Right.
And one thing that these 2,000 architects and engineers say is that there has never been a steel-framed skyscraper which came down because of fire. They don't come down. Their frame is steel. Now, these are technical people. The other thing that they talk about is the fact that even weeks after 9/11, there were pools of melted steel in the track of the building. Now, in order to melt steel, I don't know the exact temperatures. It takes something like 3,000 degrees. Whereas the temperature of burning fuel is only about 1,200 or 1,500. So you couldn't have melted steel unless there were explosions around the columns, and it wouldn't have come down unless there were explosions around the columns. And when you look at the pictures, when you look at these slow motion pictures of this thing coming down.
So Lawrence, I'm agnostic on this. Lamar and I spent 18 years researching the Kennedy assassination. I know how much work goes into actually figuring out what happened in a historic event. And I haven't put any significant amount of research into 9/11. But assuming that all of that is true, do you think Dick Cheney wired that building? Lawrence? Or Luke, rather? Luke, you're still in the air.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you think Dick Cheney was behind this? I mean, is that what you're suggesting? Luke, we're...
Are you talking to me, Luke?
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on just a minute.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, apparently, when I move my arm with my coffee cup, I dropped the last caller. My apologies. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Talk media for the sane among us. It's the Tom Hartman Program, and Luke in Englewood, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Luke.
Yes, Tom. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm the first-time caller. Friday the 13th, I would like to give a different explanation, or more or less a Christian version of it.
Okay, Friday the 13th. Go for it.
Yes. Friday is because Jesus was crucified Friday, early morning.
Mm-hmm.
13th, we have the 12 disciples plus Jesus the 13th. That's a number 13.
Uh-huh.
And it's bad luck for the state of Israel because at that time, the chief priest after that committed suicide. Was an earthquake, the temple split in half, and the state of Israel was dissolved and the people dispersed all over the world until 1948.
Well, that happened actually 70 years later.
Whatever.
The fall of the Second Temple.
Anyway, that's another explanation.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool.
All right.
Luke, thank you very much. Raul in Berrien Springs, Michigan.
Tom, when you say crackpot, Rumsfeld was involved in terrorism, of course, in these Middle East oil wars, but his record for terrorism and war crimes goes back to Vietnam. And Jeb Bush, his war crimes, we can put him at the Nicaragua-Contra situation in El Salvador, smuggling guns for drugs. He handled the money situation
from
Miami. So don't call these people crackpots. They're full-blown, bloodthirsty terrorists. They may look slick, but that's what they are, plain
okay.
and simple.
I stand corrected, and I agree with your correction of me. Thank you.
And I was going to take issue with you about President Obama's speech saying that this American exceptional constitutional democracy, does that include the slave period up until the Civil War and the after Reconstruction, the Ku Klux Klan and lynching period and today's, you know, incarceration of more black men than were in slavery?
Right.
You know, Putin's no angel, but hey, we ain't that exceptional. I'm sorry. But I have to take issue with one point.
Mm-hmm.
You said Jimmy Carter was one of the few presidents who didn't start a war. His dealings with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, he's the guy who started to open the pipeline for these Bin Laden and the rest of these terrorists to get fed on our blood money and our weapons. And so don't put Jimmy Carter in there, because I'll tell you what, I believe I voted.
Did Jimmy Carter do that, or did Congress do that? I thought when I watched Charlie Wilson's War, that movie, which I realize is a, you know, semi-fictionalized, but Charlie Wilson was a congressman who fought tooth and nail to push that through Congress. This was a congressional initiative, was it not?
I believe so, but couldn't he have vetoed it?
Well, yeah, he could have, sure.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I think that when he saw what a mess he started, he didn't really care if he won that election, because he could have stopped Reagan in his tracks, because George Bush, who was his vice presidential candidate, stole the debate books from Jimmy Carter so Ronald Reagan could look like a genius instead of an addle-brained senior citizen. So,
yeah, we know that as a matter of historical fact. Okay, Raul, points made. Thank you. Denise in Wadena, Minnesota?
Wadena,
thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call, Tom. And I'm going to keep this very general because I was warned not to get into specifics. But, you know, employers that don't pay their people decent wages don't get employees. I mean, eventually it's going to come down to, you know, and I've had this experience myself personally where people say, no, we're not going to work for that.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are there have to stay and work. And then you get into a forced overtime situation where people do make, you know, more money
right.
than what they have. Right. You know,
so what you're saying is that the paying people lousy wages is just a bad business practice.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
yeah.
It's going to cost them in the end because, you know, I mean, you can go to any town and you can say, who's the worst employer? And somebody's going to say, oh, this company, and, you know, and people repeat it. Mm-hmm. And you get a bad reputation.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Denise. Thank you for making that point. Stanley in Tyler, Texas. Hey, Stanley.
Howdy.
Hey.
Can you hear me, Tom?
I hear you just fine. You want to talk about Chemical Weapons Convention?
Yes, sir. The first thing is the attack in Fallujah, the second one, they used white phosphorus ordnance, which is considered a chemical weapon, and there are pictures of that being used.
Well, white phosphorus is used for tracer bullets, isn't it?
In this case, white phosphorus was used as a anti-personnel weapon.
Okay.
If you look at it, it's the pictures show the explosion of the shell and the track of the white phosphorus falling to the ground.
Hmm. Okay.
And white phosphorus is a very nasty, nasty burning.
Yeah, it burns like hell.
Yes, sir. It burns right through you.
Okay.
And burns on contact with water.
Yeah.
So that makes it even worse on the skin.
I mean,
on the human.
Right.
Okay.
Because we're 98% water.
Yes. The other thing is, you were reading that bit from the UN about signatories cannot attack or threaten to attack.
Correct.
Comes by country. Now, isn't the threat to use weapons against Assad at this time
a violation of that UN, whatever it is, ordinance or law?
I believe it may be. I'm not an attorney in these areas, but my read of it suggests that it may be. I'm not sure that we've actually made the threat. I think we've threatened to make the threat, if you get what I mean. And if Congress passes a resolution, then yes, we've made the threat. And I think at that point, the United States becomes a pariah country, or at least is operating outside the realm of the UN Charter, which, you know, when other countries do that, we call them pariahs. So, yeah. Stanley, thanks for the call. Excellent point. It is 27:20, coming up on 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Harpin Program. It's Anything Goes Friday. And interesting, 9/11 callers, Friday the 13th callers, McCain and Graham. We've got a lot coming
up. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Steel can melt at lower temperatures. Stick around. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you, and Danny in Brighton, Colorado, listening on AM 760. Hey, Danny, what's up?
Thanks, Tom, and your audience. This regards the architects and engineers, 9/11, explosive new evidence documentary.
Mm-hmm.
I read on a counterpoint to that on Science Daily. It was written by a materials scientist, different than the architects and engineers, which I think are COIA, on their explanations of what brought the towers down. This Christian Simonson, who wrote the article for a journal and Aluminum International Today, and it was abstracted as Science Daily, purports that the 30 tons of aluminum in each airliner are not accounted for in figuring out what caused the explosions.
Yeah, and aluminum burns hot.
Well, his thesis is that it cocooned itself in the debris and had a three-quarters to half an hour to become molten at 600 degrees and then... heated a little bit and melted down to lower floors where it reacted with water. And he cites 250 industry accidents where molten aluminum meets slightly rusty water and it produces violent explosions and also produces hydrogen gas. So are you with me so far?
Yeah, which is also explosive. Yeah.
Right. So he says this is what tore out sections of the towers where the planes hit.
Okay, so that accounts for the two towers. What accounts for Building 7?
Well, he also notes in the abstract that droplets of aluminum, both large and small, were found in Building 7. And they could have easily splashed out from the initial reaction impact in the above towers.
Nice.
And you were trying to hint around there that the penthouse section of WT-7 kind of collapsed first. That's what the film shows. And the NIST report says it was a particular pillar of, 57 or something on floor 14 that caused the collapse. The reason I bring this up is that there's a whole cottage industry of conspiracy theories out there, and I'd like to take some wind out of Alex Jones's sail out of Coast to Coast Radio. And this divides not only the left, but all people from government. And there's not going to be any money for researching this any further, but it's just that architects and engineers were short on material scientists' understandings of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's other valid explanations for what happened. You know, the Pentagon doesn't want to release propaganda footage of a plane hitting their building, and that when 737s went down in fields, and when they were having rudder problems in the 80s, they couldn't even find the debris path for these planes when they went near vertical into the ground. I mean, there's lots of explanations, and people shouldn't just buy into blindly into conspiracy theories and blame our government for all this. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I got it. Danny, a very cogent and thoughtful explanation. Thanks for calling and sharing that with us. Abdi in Chicago. Hey, Abdi, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hopefully you understand. Yeah, English is my second language, so I was just calling in regards to Senator McCain and Graham.
Mm-hmm.
They claim that if we don't attack Syria, this is going to affect the American power and prestige around the globe.
They claim that. They claim that it's going to enhance American power and prestige around the world. I think if we attack Syria, it's going to diminish American power and prestige around the world, although I agree that it would affect it.
Yeah, what I think is, what I don't know if they understand or not, but their vote to authorize the Iraqi war, not only has it bankrupted the United States economy, but it has dented the American compassion. And now we see that a lot of people are dying in Syria. And you see a lot of Americans, over 80%, don't want to intervene.
Yeah. I'm with you. Abdi, I think that you've put your finger on a very, very important point, and it's one that needs to be echoed more often. Thank you for the call. Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hi, your prior caller talking about how those buildings collapsed probably did a better job than I'm going to do. But the structural engineers and architects many years ago started to look at this because, you know, they're interested in why buildings fall down, believe it or not, and they're not part of the conspiracy, and neither am I.
Mm-hmm.
And there were really good reasons why the building fell down, and it was because there was a huge fire and an airplane hit it, and it was not really well constructed by any means. It didn't have concrete cores around the elevators. That's why nothing's left standing. The thing was basically bar joists. They had a small bearing plates on the outside of the building, and as more and more floors landed upon the floor above, there's live load and dead load, wind load, and as those floors collapsed, they exceeded the dead loads, live loads, or the structural capacity, and the fires, and also weakened the metal. That is why they fell down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, all the architects and engineers of the world, you know, have looked into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just, you know, I'm
why did Building 7 go down?
Well, I don't know. It might have been that there was a building falling down next to it, which could do also impact loads, you know, onto the ground like an earthquake.
Sure.
I don't know the reason on that one, but, you know, to think that that got wired up and the other one was wired up to blow up and then the jets hit it, I mean, you made the point. There's an awful lot of, you have to have an awful lot of suspension of credulity to believe in this stuff. And
yeah.
I'm a conspiracy theorist, and I'm embarrassed by what I'm hearing from people. I mean, just really.
I, like I said, I spent 18 years trying to figure out the conspiracy to kill Jack Kennedy, and I think that we actually did figure it out, although there are people who will tell you I'm wrong. And you've got to get some fairly solid evidence, and you've got to explain every one of the hey, but what about this? You know, if you can't explain all those things, and I'm pretty much with you. I am very skeptical of, in fact, I'm totally skeptical of the idea that somebody wired these buildings to explode, and that somebody had something to do with PNAC or Dick Cheney or anything else. I think that, you know, it's enough of a conspiracy, frankly. It's perhaps too strong a word, but it's enough of a conspiracy that the Bush administration for 8 months was in office and 9 months was in office and had been told by the previous administration, Bill Clinton, Al Gore, and Sandy Berger had explicitly told George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Condi Rice that Al-Qaeda was coming to get them. The CIA was yelling it at them. Richard Clark was running around, his words, with his hair on fire. Everybody was upset about this except the senior officials in the Bush administration, and because they thought that this was an obsession left over from the Clinton years, and they didn't want to have anything to do with anything that smacked of Clintonism. And that, in my opinion, is a pretty horrific thing. You know, that's enough for me, actually. But, Richard, thank you for the call. Excellent point, and appreciate it. By the way, just a quick note, check out my latest Liberally Yours column. It's over at dailycaller.com. It's titled A Living Wage is the Essence of American Exceptionalism. You can go to our homepage and click on the link and Leave your comments at the Daily Caller. It's a right-wing website. I'm the only liberal there. I could use your help. Kenneth in Little Lake, Michigan. Hey, Kenneth.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Tom. And I want to respond about your theme here of the what's going on in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is that this is a post-World War II world we live in, and the diplomacy required in the shrinking world is that of a more nimble, fluid situation that we have to confront, requiring more open-mindedness and flexibility,
mm-hmm.
and as at the same time imposing clear limits and parameters for negotiation of anything. And I think President Obama and Secretary Kerry are practicing what I call dynamic diplomacy. And this is a kind of diplomacy that takes these factors into consideration rather than a rigid black and white, either-or World War II, World War I kind of situation that killed millions of people.
Right. I don't disagree. I think that this is being handled, the situation in Syria, to a certain extent. I think that, you know, Obama set up a situation that led to this imprudently. But it's being handled in a fairly deft fashion. It's, you know, can you imagine if George Bush was president or John McCain?
It's exactly.
Like, I mean, we would be in the war to end all wars. We would be in World War III right now if John McCain or George Bush was still, you know, if George Bush was still president or John McCain had become president. And God only knows with Mitt Romney. I mean, he would have just flip flopped all over the place, and we'd be in war there, and then 2 weeks later we wouldn't, and then 2 weeks later we would, and then we wouldn't call it wars anymore, and then, you know, it's like, I don't know. Who knows? But
You're exactly right. There are too many unknown variables, and especially with Iran in the picture and the ships offshore, vulnerable to some kind of attack.
Yes.
And all we need is an American ship lost in the Gulf and or the Mediterranean. And
well, now you've got six or seven Russian warships in that area, too, in the Mediterranean. I mean, this is not a good situation. And I am very hopeful. We all need to be, you know, sending good vibes or prayers or whatever your thing is to Mrs. Kerry and Lavrov, that they can work this stuff out and come to some sort of reasonable, peaceful resolution. Kind of thank you for the call. We'll be right back. It's 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Anything Goes Friday, and somebody's going to get that Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country. Hey, thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, writer-researchers Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, to all the companies and organizations that syndicate our program, Pacifica Radio, I guess, isn't a company, it's a nonprofit, Westwood One, Pacifica Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, CRN Network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, and to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner and Victoria Jones and everybody at Talk Radio News Service, to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. Just a quick note here. A friend of ours, a friend of the show, I don't know if she wants me to identify her specifically, so, but yesterday had a small medical problem, and, you know, it's none of my business or yours, any of the details of it, but anyhow, went off to the hospital in a ambulance and came home in a taxi, and things seem okay, but, you know, we'll see how it works out. But anyhow, she sent me a note. She said, I'll keep you informed at a greater level of detail so you can see just how bad our socialist healthcare system is. This is in the United Kingdom. So far, it has not cost me a penny apart from the taxi ride home. Nice taxi driver. And I have not had to fill in a single form or sign anything or show any documentation. It's for spending half the day at the hospital, right? So, very interesting. Anyway, Jim in Boston, Mass. Jim, it says you are a member of the Architects for Truth.
Yes, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been watching you since the day after Al Franken left, and you filled his shoes.
Thank you.
And you're a mentor of mine, and I just want to give you a quick answer to this thing, because you had an earlier caller who kind of described, it wasn't cheap construction, it was innovative construction.
Mm-hmm.
Minoru Yamasaki was the architect. I actually live in another one of his buildings in Honolulu on the 31st floor, and it's the antithesis of this building. It's solid concrete, you know, really, really strong building. But this was built, remember, New York City was on the verge of bankruptcy, and this was a new development that was by the Port Authority to save the, you know, the city, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it did its job, but it was done, yeah, on the cheap and a new way of building. You know, none of the stair towers, they're all gypsum wallboard.
Hmm.
They're not concrete block. So that's why people couldn't escape.
I see.
And what happened is when the trusses started failing in the building, the exterior skin was the entire structure of the building. They were only being braced back to the central core. So if you watch the videos, that exterior skin is peeling away like a banana. So those floors are now freestand, you know, they're just falling with
right.
gravity. That's why it looks like it was a demoed building.
Right.
Building 7 was actually built on top of a major electrical substation for all of Lower Manhattan. I read the FEMA report. That's why I know all this stuff. Mm-hmm. I read it twice. And the first, I don't know, I can't exactly remember the floors, 3 or 4 or 5 floors were these giant trusses, the entire size of the footprint of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So when you had those fires burning all day, and they were burning because debris fell from the towers
mm-hmm.
and severed fuel lines because there were a lot of stock trading businesses in there, and they needed to have backup power, so they had thousands of gallons of fuel in there to, you know, run those generators.
Right.
So when all those fires were burning, eventually, you know, they were burning all day, that giant truss in the center of the building failed.
Mm-hmm.
And it failed from the center of the truss. And when you watch the video, you see the center of the building implode first, and then it falls into itself. And it looks like a controlled demolition.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because it's that truss.
And it looks like a controlled demolition, because if you were going to do a controlled demolution, you would put the explosive on that truss.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're not saying that it was. You also said it also says here that not all the Architects for Truth think that this was an inside job.
Yeah, I know, and I don't believe that. I don't think it is. But I know there's elements in there. They talk about thermite, you know, and all this other stuff. I mean, really, does anybody seriously believe that they went into these buildings and loaded them full of explosives to do a controlled demolition? That's a really complicated thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And how would you disguise it?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, and they'd be able to pull it off without a single person spilling the beans, you know?
Yeah. It strains credulity. Jim Shane says you're going to be the recipient of our copy of Rebooting the American Dream, 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country. Let me put you on hold. Jim's on line 5, Danielle. And we have 1 minute. Carol, listening to WWRL in Montclair, New Jersey. The last minute of the show is yours, Carol. What's up?
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to share some bizarre good news that mm-hmm. I've never heard of, except for my son, who is in his 16th year as a flight attendant for United out of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
He missed flight 175 by one day. He was scheduled for it on 9/12, and he lost a bunch of friends in the crew.
Mm.
He was vice president of his union at the time. I just have to make this fast talk fast. They have a pre-flight meeting an hour ahead of departure. They go over the weather. They go over profiling, which they've been doing since Khobar Towers occurred. And they go over anybody notables who are going to be on the flight. And there's music.
Can you quickly summarize, Carol?
Yeah, the flight nonstop from Boston to San Francisco, which goes over Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Five guys bought tickets with cash, had no luggage, never got on the plane.
Oh, interesting. So in other words, there was a fifth plane that might have been taken out on 9/11.
Right. Well, and what the crew does is go to the gate and people watch like we do.
Very interesting. Carol, thanks for the information, and thanks for listening to the program. Coming up Monday, all the news and information from the weekend, including the latest on Syria, plus Washington, D.C.'s mayor just vetoed the union-backed wage bill. Libertarians are celebrating. Why? We'll have a debate with that.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Tag, you're it. See you Monday.